Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Two things before we get into our third gay episode of Pride Month. First, please go to Must Have Seen TV on Instagram, click the link in bio, and make sure you donate to bail funds across the country, maybe specifically Atlanta, considering the very important protests and demonstrations going on there right now. And then the other point is, if you love Drag Race and have not seen RuPaul's Drag Race Season 12 and don't know who the winner is, you can just fast forward to about 19 minutes in when we actually get to talking about Seinfeld and enjoy.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century from I Love Lucy to News Radio. I'm your TV guy, Brett White, and I'm also a reporter producer for Decider.com. And welcome to, good God, I do not know what episode number this is of the quarantine era. I do know that it is part three of the Pride Month extravaganza, kicked off with Frank DeCara and Jim Colucci talking about Golden Girls. Last week, we had Justin Kirkland on to talk about Roseanne, and this week, I am joined by the host extraordinaire of the fantastic Drag Race podcast, Drag Her, Mano Agapian. Hello, Mano.
Hi, how are you?
How's it going? I've been starting off every podcast by asking, how's your quarantine going? And I feel like,
right.
Jesus goddamn Christ.
Yeah. God damn it. I hate, you know that saying, like, God only gives as much as you can handle.
Yeah, who? Oh, this might be a spoiler for the season finale of We're Here, which will have already aired by the time this comes out. But I think that Shangela or someone says that in that episode. And, you know, when you're white, when Shangela or someone says it, you're like, preach, I understand. But like right now, yes. I'm like, I'm past. I can't.
Oh, my God. I'm so spent. My gauge, you know, the cartoon thing where like the speedometer needle breaks the glass.
It's broken off.
Fucking A. I mean, it's a lot, but
my earbuds are plugging into steam that would be coming out of my ears right now. It's just plugged in.
I'm really glad to be here, and I'm glad that I'm connecting with you because I've been a fan of everything you are.
Everything.
And we haven't had the chance to like really keep
you.
So I'm glad that this quarantine has brought us together in that way.
You know, it's the magic of Pride Month and a quarantine time. We have a lot of mutual friends because you're UCB LA. I was UCB New York. Nicole Byer used to be the front desk receptionist at the UCB Training Center here in New York.
Yes.
On Saturdays.
She tells amazing stories about that. That's so fun.
Yeah. So like just great time. But since I have you on the podcast, and it's Pride Month, and gays can do whatever we want this month, and also month, goddammit, I'm going to talk about
Rock Out.
I'm going to talk about Drag Race, dammit.
Yay! Well, let's talk. I mean, please.
So you are the host of Drag Her, the only RuPaul's Drag Race podcast.
I can't believe
in existence.
I can't believe it. I'm like, I'm very thankful that we're the only drag podcast.
It's wild.
I'm just really shocked. Thankful to the universe, you know, because no one else has a take on this. Certainly no one with more experience.
Definitely not.
Certainly no one who's been on the show.
Absolutely. But you're on Bad Drag Race at the UCB stage in Los Angeles. So, like, I mean, that is, you know, come through.
I mean, honestly, that's finishing school.
Yeah.
if you want to win RuPaul's Drag Race, you have to come to Bad Drag Race at UCB. so you can learn how to not shave your face.
And I am the only person on the internet that writes critically about Drag Race. I don't know how this has happened, but that's the niche I've carved out for myself.
How'd you do that?
I will say, I am WOWIE nominated, so...
You are! Fucking cool. Come through.
Yeah. Did not win. We lost to a book club. I don't understand. I don't really know what's going on over there.
You know what losing to a book club is? Drag.
I got red. The book. I got red. But I thought so after the season 12 finale, which I will, uh-huh. We won't get into spoilers because whatever, but it was a great finale.
It really was.
Literally, I can say the winner was deserving. And if you don't know who won it, but you know who the three finalists are, you'd be like, yeah, that makes sense because all three of them would have been deserving.
That's true. But I said that the best top three since season 6. Controversial, but that's how I feel.
See, season 9 for me, which we'll get to.
Yes.
Because the crazy thing I did, I love me a spreadsheet. I went through and I was like, Crystal Method is one of my top 10 queens of all time. And then I was like, wait, is she actually? So then it being quarantine time and me being at home on a Friday night, like I always am anyway, I was like, well, let me make a spreadsheet and actually rank all the drag queens in Drag Race history. So
interesting. Okay, what were your findings?
Yeah, I was going to read my top 10 because this was content I was going to put on Twitter. But then I was like, is not the time.
It's
literally not the time for anything fun.
It's really not the time. It's really not the time, unfortunately. But, you know, all we can do is support, scream from the rooftops.
Yes.
Support Black Lives.
Go to both of our Instagrams. There will be plenty of links and ads.
There will.
There's some of the Must Have Seen TV Instagram because you have to be responsible with a platform.
Yeah.
But I was going to read my top 10 and then maybe get your take on these queens. So my number 10, and again, this is like kind of see in my pants. Maybe there could be some nudging up and down, but who knows? My number 10 was Trinity Taylor, Trinity the Tuck.
Wow. Of all time.
Of all time. Where are
okay.
we? Where are we coming?
No, I mean, I think that could make sense. I just need to hear I need to see the rest of the cards in your deck.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, I love her because she's one of those ones who you didn't love and then you really love. I really have come to love her, and I certainly love how proactively supportive she is of queens of color. And that's
she's great.
And she was unbelievable on All Stars 4.
Yes. So this is the tea is I tried to think about their trajectory, like what they did in the canon of the show. And then if queens were tied, I then tried to take into account what they've done outside of the show. Mm-hmm. So my number 9 is Kimchi.
Love it. Okay. Love it.
We're big Kimchi fans.
I'm a big Kimchi fan. I really like her. Yes. Interesting. It's so hard. I think what's so great about the queens is like, how do you compare, you know, apples to potatoes? Both delicious.
Yeah.
Both fruits. It's my favorite fruit.
It's a potato.
They're both amazing. It's almost like if you were hired to put the queens in a list from 100.
Oh yeah, I forgot you have
experience. It would be a terrible job that would haunt you for years to come.
Yes. My number 8 is Bob the Drag Queen.
Oh, God. See, for me, okay, we can keep going, but Bob, for me, is just the one. Mm-hmm. She is that one queen, and I think she is my number one. Just love her. I think she can do almost everything, if not everything, very well.
All right, now here's where things are going to start getting controversial, maybe. I don't know.
Okay, here we go.
My number 7, and this might be recency bias, Crystal Method, coming in at number 7 of all time.
I like her, you know, that's a hot take.
Hot take.
But I think I'm here for it. I love her.
Because giving me the story of season 12, the kind of story we haven't seen on Drag Race in a long time, of Queen totally coming from nowhere, I think also throwing a big monkey wrench in the producers' plans, to be honest.
Yeah.
They were like,
I agree.
Jan or Britta is going to go all the way, no question, is what they assumed. Crystal Method is easily a third, fourth home filler queen. But then play the game better than, like, literally, like, playing the game. Being like, RuPaul likes my mullet. The one week I do not take her advice, I get in trouble on Snatch Game. Gonna stick to that advice every week. Love it.
Yeah.
Love her.
She is the alt queen we've deserved for so long.
Isn't it? Is it shady to say that it sucks that Evie Oddly won her season when Crystal didn't win her? Oh, geez. Is that... Oops, that's a spoiler. Sorry. I love Evie, though. I do love Evie.
I love Evie, but I do agree that when you go back and look at the... You look at the lineup, she won a season that was... I always say it's like a weirdly concocted soup. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like all the ingredients were good, but they should not have been in the same soup, which is why...
Potato watermelon soup.
Exactly. And then you're like, this watermelon is the best ingredient. And you're like, yeah, but it's why is it in the potato soup? So I hear what you're saying.
So she's my seven. My number six, Binda La Creme.
Wow, love her. She's amazing. I love Binda La Creme. And I wanted more for her in All Stars 3. Like, obviously, she gave us one of the biggest goops in Drag Race history. But it didn't... It's not her fault, because I think she's kind of a badass for doing it how she did. It just made the rest of the season less good.
Well, like, because she was... It was that Manila thing of, like, she was clearly going to be the front runner to win the season. She was winning literally every single challenge. And then she steps down, and it's like, oh, well, it's Shangela, obviously. It's obviously going to be Shangela. And then that doesn't happen either.
And it got fuzzy.
So speaking of All Stars 3, my number five favorite queen of all time, Shangela.
No complaints there. I think Shangela is the original phoenix of the Drag Race universe. Yeah. I mean, no one had a better... like rise from the ashes, which is why it was so heartbreaking, and I'm still heartbroken she didn't win All Stars 3. I know it's crazy. I know it's ill and sick, and my brain is a sad little place. It still hurts me that she didn't win that season.
We just rewatched. So after 12 is done, we rewatched season 3 because, like, I'm shaky on the first 3 seasons. So we haven't watched them as much, and I was like, well, you know, India's coming back, Mariah's coming back. Alexis is coming back. So I was like, I need to get familiar with the three of them more. And we watched it. And she's like, Shangela on season 3. So, like, come a long way. But it's already, like, so there. Just needed that makeup glow up, fashion glow up. And then her All-Stars 3 run is just... and then watching her on We're Here, which is where, like, this number 5. Like, Jesus Christ.
That show is so great. That show is so fantastic. So I love that show. And it's just... excellent. It's just an excellent queer show. And I think it could, depending on how the Emmys work out, it could give Drag Race a run for its money
they would be indifferent. It would because there's both reality competition and then reality unstructured. And so it might give Queer Eye a run for its money and win, because Queer Eye, I think, has won the last 2 years. And I think We're Here could easily beat it.
I enjoyed We're Here more. I love Queer Eye, but I enjoyed it more.
I love Queer Eye, but We're Here... I mean, it's HBO, mama. Like, it's, you know, it's not
mama,
TV. It is HBO.
Money. Like, it is when they're when you just put... You feel them rubbing the money on bread like it's butter. Yeah. I love HBO.
All right, so here's controversial, and this is maybe a goopa. I don't know. Okay. I'm also a basic white gay, so my number 4 is Trixie Mattel. I can't help.
Okay.
I'm a gay from Tennessee. I love Dolly Parton. I love Trixie Mattel.
It's one
of those things where it is the career outside of Drag Race gets her this high, because season 7, I love her on All Stars 3.
It took me a long time to fall in love with her. And that's not a judgment on her. It just says, like, you know, I think we probably have different perspectives. And for me, I liked her, and then I really liked her. And then literally after All Stars 3, I was like, okay, she's actually fucking hilarious.
Yeah. It was watching Moving Parts, which is on Netflix. Everyone should watch it. Watching Moving Parts was like this weird therapeutic thing for All Stars 3, where even though I do like Trixie more than Shangela, I was like, Shangela should have won. But watching Moving Parts and seeing all of the work that Trixie puts into, literally all the spinning plates she has going, it made me realize, you know what? Yeah. You know what? She does win All Stars. Like, she did deserve that. Just seeing how hard that she works and, like, how much she actually did care. Like, that moment where she's like packing up while it's like while Allstars is airing and she's talking about all the hate she's getting online. She's like, these bitches do not understand like how much of a mindfuck it is to go on these shows. And I'm like, oh, that's a level of vulnerability I like seeing from you.
She did not click with me immediately. That's not a judgment on her. That's just like, you know, we all come from different queer tribes and like, and it took a little more to be like, okay, now I see why you're sickening.
Yeah. And this is, I do think that talking about Drag Race Kings really does clue you into what queer tribe you're a part of. And I think that is very evident by my top three. My number three of all time is Katya Zamolodchikova.
Love.
Because Trixie outside of Drag Race I like more than Katya, but if you're talking about what they did on Drag Race, Katya on All Stars 2, oh my God.
Right.
Oh my God.
Love her.
Oh
yeah, she is, I really love Katya. She's a fucking freak, but it's, you know, it's so sincere and like the way her brain is oh God, what is it like? It's like a broken cuckoo clock that's also perfectly oiled. You know what I mean? Like it's like,
and it's on her head.
Oh my God, it's like a fucking, she's like a part human, part machine, beast thing that's perfectly hilarious without ever trying. She's amazing.
Yeah, she's absolutely phenomenal, and I adore her. My number two, and this is where my roots of Drag Race being a season 9 convert come into play, because my number two is Shea Coulee, number two of all time.
Love.
The more I watch season 9, and me and my husband host season 9 parties specifically, where all of our friends who never watched Drag Race come over and we just watch season 9 from beginning to end.
Really? It's a great season.
And it's great because, for one thing, it is only 45-minute episodes.
Oh,
so,
right.
Like, you can really power through that season in a sitting. And it has the best finale of all time, maybe up until this most recent one, where...
I agree.
It culminates, like, when I always make sure I have my phone out to capture the straights watching Sasha Velour do the rose petals because the jaws drop. Like, it's like they've never seen anything like this before. And it's just magic all over again.
I think no one would disagree with you that it's the best finale in Drag Race history. It's the best finale. And no one will touch that. I can't wait till we get disproven, but no one will touch it. That finale was unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And Shea Coulee's run in season 9 is just unimpeachable. And I love her so much. And I cannot wait to see her in All Stars 5.
Me too. It's going to be excited. It's going to be exciting to see her because I know that's already something they're already including that as part of her narrative of like, I was gutted when I realized that even though I... you know, blew up the season, much like Gigi. No matter
narrowing it down,
you can cut this. Whatever. Track record aside, I was surprised by how things turned out.
Yeah, and then my number one of all time. I'm wearing the shirt, Sasha Velour.
Wow. Yeah. I love her. I'm gagged. I love Sasha Velour, and actually her Smoke and Mirrors was the best drag show I've ever seen in my life.
I want to see it. I never saw it. I don't leave my apartment.
It was the best. It's the best drag show in the world. But I can't believe Alyssa's not on your list, honey.
Alyssa is number 20.
Number 20?
Yeah.
Honestly, where? I honestly, to quote my true number one or number two queen, I smell a stunt.
Yeah, I know. See, me and my husband struggle with this because we both don't. We have a bit of like a Lil Sebastian moment with pageant queens. It's a lot of like her, like Anne, her. Like, it takes me a while to warm up to pageant queens like Alyssa and Trinity and like a Jada. Like, they have to also prove to be fucking freaks. And it takes a while. Like, Jada did during the political debate. I was like, okay, cool. I can get with you. Trinity discovered her inner freak.
Her growth
starfish.
On the show is crazy. Yeah.
When it comes to like a Sasha v. Alyssa, it's kind of like what, you know, your different Drag Race choose your own journey. Cause like, there's just something about like, I don't know. I find Sasha's reverence for queer history so endearing.
It's amazing, but I will say Brett, you are canceled. We are friends, but the fact that Alyssa is not in your top 10, I'm shook.
I love everyone in my top 25. They're all, you know, Alyssa's a 4 out of 5, but
who's your number 10 and 9 again?
Trinity Taylor and Kim Chi.
The fact that Alyssa isn't higher than Trinity is a little shaking. It's shaking me.
But no, I watched all of Dancing Queen. I interviewed Alyssa. I love Alyssa. Alyssa is one of the most perfect creatures to ever walk through those doors, as Katya said. But I don't know.
Yeah. She is most. But to quote my queen, I'm going to say also, why are you over here trying to act cute?
See, this is my hot Drag Race takes. This is why I need a platform.
I like it. I love debating it. I think it's safe to say we're both fucking gay nerds.
There's anything wrong with that. Boom.
No, woo! No, we're gay loser nerds, and I'm very proud.
But now that I have forced sitcom fans to either fast forward or listen to, I don't know, 15 minutes of Drag Race talk, we can travel to February 11th, 1993, when National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon number 1 ruled the box office. I Will Always Love You by Whitney Houston topped the charts.
Ooh.
And NBC aired the Seinfeld episode, The Outing. Mono, you must have seen The Outing before today.
I did, but I forgot a lot of it. I did, but then I rewatched it today because we were going to chat about it, and I love the idea. Yeah, I mean, what do I say first?
Your history with Seinfeld? Because I gave you giving a list of shows, be like, you know, what's mm-hmm. what are you more mm-hmm. knowledgeable about? What are you comfortable with? And you were like, Seinfeld was one of them. So I was like, let's go with Seinfeld. Because I haven't talked about Seinfeld since episode 2 or 3 of the podcast.
Really?
And this is 92 or so. So it's been overdue. What is your history with Seinfeld?
I watched it in the 90s. My family watched it in the 90s. I think it's important to know that my family is Greek village people. And so when something from American pop culture gets them, it's usually excellent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like I Love Lucy, caramel popcorn, and Seinfeld.
Yeah. Alyssa Edwards, the top of the top.
It's like Jurassic Park. It's like things that are just moments. So my family did watch Seinfeld because they're like, this is good. This is fantastic. These are amazing plays that have been captured in three tiny acts. So my family did watch the show and we thought it was amazing. So I watched it when I was young and you know, tee-hee-heed all the live long day.
Yeah, I was obsessed with Seinfeld, watched it. I don't think I didn't watch this episode live because I was too young for NBC adult sitcoms. This is fully TGIF time for me, 1993.
Yeah, me too.
So I had a Kramer t-shirt in middle school. Love me some Kramer.
Cute.
You know?
Cute. I think I had the Art Vandelay post.
That
see? Everyone had.
See?
Just like, oh,
Seinfeld's all over the place.
Oh, it's proof that I'm funny.
Yeah, it's like this Kramer shirt is my personality.
I bought a print that truly must be more like must outnumber the ET cartridges that are buried in the desert.
This week on Must Have Seen TV, we'll be talking about the Seinfeld episode The Outing. It is the 17th episode of season 4 and was written by Larry Charles and directed by Tom Sharones, who I learned is Greek or part Greek.
Oh, my people.
Yeah. Here's how Amazon or here's how Hulu describes the episode. When an eavesdropping college reporter mistakenly prints that Jerry and his pal George are intimate longtime companions, Jerry vainly works overtime to prove his straightness. Mono, how accurate is that description?
Pretty accurate, I would say. That's a pretty accurate description. Yeah. He works overtime to prove his straightness. And, you know, this is when gay panic was celebrated. Uh-huh. And I will say this is one of the better pieces of gay panic pop culture I've seen.
Yeah.
It's not the best.
And yeah, and we'll get to the reason why, because I think it's very, I mean, over the overnote, the overnote, the overarching note
overnote.
Is like, so like overnote. Larry Charles wrote the episode and they mm-hmm. were legit worried, like, this is gay panic. Like, this is going to seem like we're making fun of gays. And he wrote a mm-hmm. note on the script that he submitted. He, I think he handwrote, not that there's anything wrong with that. And then either Larry David or
Jerry Seinfeld was like, no, just put that line literally in the script, literally every single time. Kind of like control search, like just add this block of text. And it is true, like that one line, saying it, I think like 12 times in one episode in 1993, it does undercut the gay panic a little bit.
A little bit. You know, it's interesting, though, because it's kind of like a get out of jail free card.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
we're
going to say the worst thing, or we're going to say just truly a sharp, biting thing. But we're going to say this and you're going to laugh at it. Because but now what we have to decide is, are we laughing at the homophobia behind it, or are we laughing at people's willingness to make fun of their own homophobia?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
But there's
is it
also,
outward or...
There also, eventually, there becomes the meta joke of, it's the most fourth wall breaking I think Seinfeld might ever do, in terms of, like, they're literally saying, like, this is a screenwriter's note. Like, at the end, it's like, these are not, this is not how people talk. Seinfeld is known for natural dialogue, and this is so clunky and unnatural that it becomes a joke how unnatural it is. And so, therefore, there's this meta joke of you're also laughing at the fact that, like, clearly, the screenwriters put this in.
But I mean, as a queer person, I remember real conversations that sounded like this in my house.
Yes. Oh,
I remember people saying, like, well, you know, he's friendly. But you know, God bless him.
It's fine. So like any old Seinfeld episode, the episode starts with a stand-up bit that is Jerry talking about birthdays. Now he's tired of celebrating birthdays. And it's just like the most Jerry Seinfeld observational humor. I can't remember a joke from it. Like, it's so just inoffensive milquetoast. And it's part
of the... I remember this bit.
The way... Oh, yeah.
Because he does it in, like, a later stand-up special that's... I actually think it's very fucking funny, where he's, like... I think he, like, outlines what the four major birthdays are. He's, like, you get all the birthdays up until 12 or 10. Then you get, like, three more. And I think it's, like, 18, 30...
Like
60. It's like, and then that's it. It's like something funny like that. Then the rest is like downhill.
Yeah. So then the episode opens proper, and it opens immediately with George dumping a random girlfriend of the week, and she's just flipping out. And I am kind of obsessed with this woman.
Yes, she's hilarious.
She's hilarious. She is like fully like, I don't want to live because George Costanza is dumping her.
She's like, you're good. What I love about her saying, you're good. She's not saying you're the best.
No, she's just like,
you're not a murderer.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to rob me. And this phase of my life, that's enough.
Where is her show? Megan Mullally auditioned for that part, did not get it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But, like, she really does kill it. And I do love that there's, like, this smash cut of, like, George being like, she wanted to kill herself, smash cut. And Elaine's response is just, like, over you? And she, like, kind of laughs under her.
Isn't he also like, I know.
Like,
I know.
Who is this? Overall, I love Julia Louis-Dreyfus. As an adult gay, Julia Louis-Dreyfus is the reason to watch this show. She is amazing. Especially
it's
this.
It's a shame there isn't more of her in this ep, but I get it.
What she gets is this, like, weird character game where she doesn't want to take off her coat.
Uh-huh.
And she's so aggressively ugly about it. And I really love that. I really. And it kind of starts here, like, Elaine's kind of like ribbing Jerry and George real hard, and Jerry points out, like, you've had kind of an acid tongue lately, and she gets this look of, like, the smile on her face, like, yeah, you fucking bet I do. It's great.
Yeah, she's a real fucking treat, and I like that she incites this game of gay baiting, if you will.
So Jerry is waiting for an NYU School of Journalism, like a journalism school student, to show up to interview him for, like, a college paper. And this is also just, like, taking us back to 93 when meeting a stranger in public is impossible. Because neither of them know what each other's look like. They don't have cell phones. They keep going to the payphone to call each other. And it's also, I do like that Jerry points out, she doesn't know who I am. She doesn't know anything about comedy. I don't know why she wants to talk to me.
I mean, also one of the biggest leaps, really, well, one of the most, the hardest to believe things in this episode is that everyone reads the article.
Oh,
from
yeah.
From this, like, college outlet.
NYU, and, like, the AP picks it up, and it goes, I mean, well, we'll get to what the article is, which I have some issues with what the article, but, So, it's Jerry's birthday coming up. George got him tickets to Guys and Dolls. Like, he tells Elaine this. Elaine got him a two-way phone. Both of these are going to come into play in true Seinfeld interconnected fashion.
Live that a two-way, that a phone with call waiting. Is a treasure
that, like, a whole episode is built around key moments.
It's fucking amazing.
They start having their, like, Seinfeld banter back and forth about who the ugliest world leader is, and Elaine clocks that the girls in the booth next to them are eavesdropping, so then she just blurts out, so you two, you need to come out already.
And yeah, and then there's the whole thing because they're eavesdropping, which that's funny too, because that's never really dealt with, like, why was that lady an eavesdropper? See, that's just part of her journalism.
She's a
nature journalist.
She's like, you know what? I have to keep my ear open, ear to the ground for hot scoops.
Hot scoops. If you've had a penis in your mouth, that's a hot scoop.
Ooh, hot scoop telling everyone. What is funny is that Jerry says this line that has stuck with me ever since I first watched this episode in middle school, of like, yeah, everyone thinks I'm gay. I'm single, thin, and neat. And like,
oh, yes.
That has stuck. I think about that line at least once a week, probably, for just who knows. Like, it's just one of those things.
Single in my 30s. Yeah. That's really interesting, because you could tell that the writers were like, look, we want to make sure that the stereotype we're making is as positive as possible.
Yeah.
And who doesn't want to be thought of as thin?
Thin. I mean, there is, like, we'll get to it, but, like, Jerry's, his stand-up routine at the end of the episode is, like, actually kind of good gay stand-up in a weird way. Because it's, like, there are definitely gay people that are the opposite of thin, neat, and whatever. And it's, like, thin, clean, and neat. Are they persecuting the gay community? It's, like, yes, Jerry.
Right. Yes.
They are.
Yes, they are.
They are.
Unless you have a very specific slop daddy fetish, which is not common enough for my liking. I want to become a slop daddy.
Slop daddy. Well, you know, maybe a New York, an NYU reporter will blow up your spot. You really get the
word
out.
You know what it reminds me of? Do you ever, Patton Oswalt had an old stand-up bit where he was basically like, and I, you know, it's triggering, so I won't say what he says, but he basically says, there have to be gay people with special needs, right? You know, but he uses a more triggering word.
Okay.
And he just then does an impersonation of, like, there have to be people with different mental capabilities who are also gay.
This is
right?
old, right? This is an old bit.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's like, I guess it's 98, 99.
Well,
but I mean,
Twitter will discover it and then resurface it as if it is a new thing.
That's true.
Like, everyone getting mad about Tropic Thunder all over again. And it's just like, I feel old because I remember when we did this the first and also second times.
Yeah.
Now we're doing it again. Anyway. So then the next scene is we're at Jerry's apartment, and George comes in and he, like, says, I got a great porn name actor. And Jerry's like, yeah, Buck Naked. You told me already. And this Buck Naked thing keeps coming back.
Is it come back in other episodes?
No. Just in this one episode. They mention it so many times.
Yes, it becomes an incredibly important story point.
Yeah, which I guess is a really good example of tight Seinfeld scripting, because all of these things are like setting up dominoes that then get knocked over later. It's very interesting. Then the George asks Jerry if he likes the shirt that his girlfriend Allison got him. And I don't know,
right.
I thought George's shirt was fine. I mean, I guess
I think it's hideous, but like,
it's kind of, it's very, like, normcore. I mean, compared to what George normally wears, I mean, I don't really know how it stands out. It's got like a busy print, kind of.
The print is shocking to me. Like, I guess you're right. Like, from a, it's a, what's it? A Monet, as Clueless termed it, you know,
it's
far from a far good, but far from good. You know, when it's close up, it's just a mess, that whole thing.
I could see that being sold at Uniqlo now is kind of the,
you're
the
right.
Vibe,
no,
of
you're
it,
right.
In a way.
Cause I dress like a adult toddler. So like, I wear like tiny pink shorts and white tank top. So I don't know what good clothes are, but to me, I was like, oh boy.
I want to see George Costanza in that outfit though.
Yeah.
Tiny pink shorts.
Yeah.
And, God, please.
Yes.
So then the reporter shows up because she was meeting. They're like, you know, let's just meet in person at my apartment. That way you'll know that I'm here. Also, I want to, like,
get on to that reporter for not doing, because as a journalist, it's like, find out what the person looks like. Jesus
yeah.
Christ. If you're doing, like, I don't know, that whole meeting at the diner thing was stupid, but she had to overhear the gay thing. So she shows up.
That's just a little lovely hole.
So as soon as she sees Jerry, let's get into the journalist and her reaction to Jerry and George and the out. Like, it's. She sees Jerry. She immediately is kind of like surprised and a little bit like, oh, like basically in her mind, like, he's the gay from the diner in this weird.
Uh-huh.
And then she's like, oh, no, he can stay. I want to talk to George, too.
Uh-huh.
It's this weird, a lot of assuming.
Right.
Never point blank asking. Also taking their business into her own hands.
What's the scoop? I mean, Spartans did it thousands of years ago. What's the fucking scoop, babe?
Yeah.
You've touched a penis. Get over it. Get over yourself.
Well, it's
I can't.
Like, what was this paper? Because this paper was definitely like, what, a class assignment? What is the... They definitely touch on a lot of stuff, though, because later Jerry's like, yeah, she said she's not going to use the angle.
I just thought of that. The students of NYU are not privy to gay lifestyles?
It's shocking.
What are they? What are we talking about? Like, I the students there would be fucking shawamming on the floors
all the time.
Manhattan's dance halls, while also like following fucking Lee Bowery around. They're not
like, this is 93. Yeah, these are club kids at NYU, damn it. I do like that as soon as she comes in, George immediately gets a little bit more of, like, affectations. His voice gets like, oh, I don't like my voice on tape recording. It gets so high and whiny, and he does, like, a hand wave.
Uh-huh,
he then, like, gets onto Jerry, like, did you watch this pair? And it is the kind of talk they have normally, but through the lens of this, like, are they gay filter that the episode has is really...
Right.
I found it funny, but then I did question why I found it funny. I don't know.
Like, overall, I left watching this and I was like, you know what? They did a pretty damn good job if I can watch it all these years later. But I mean, it is unfortunate that, like, you know, we're so used to stories about, you know, four white people, four straight white people, and we are ultimately the butt of the joke. And the only presence of a gay person is very late in the episode where a man truly peacocks his head in and almost squawks a gay line of dialogue. It's like, oh, that's the presence we get.
Yes, that is the representation we get, because we don't actually get Jerry and George. I do like that when she's like, how did you two meet? And Jerry's like, oh, it's a gym locker room. And then George's like, no, he was climbing the rope and I was spurning, I was spotting him. And I started slipping and I burned my thighs. I did laugh out loud at the burning my thighs.
Yeah, joke. I think I laughed. I have to admit, I laughed when he was asking about his sweater, because I was like, that made me laugh.
Yeah.
It's a little basic, but it made, well, what do you think of this shirt? It made me laugh.
Yeah. Now, this is where I got angry, because so as a journalist, air quote, did not go to school for journalism, but I try. When I am writing articles about old TV shows, I do a thing called That Gay Episode, where I go through and watch episodes like this from before 1997. Right. And I always try to do my research to find out, one, was the show creator gay? Two, was the actor playing the gay character gay? And three, was the episode writer gay? And in doing that research, and this is, again,
the answer was no.
No, not in this episode, no. But in general, like, I always try to err on the side of caution. Like, basically, like, I don't like the idea of asserting this person was totally gay unless there is, like, a lot of evidence. Like, if they're dead, it gets hard. Just because it feels
like... It is complicated.
Like, it's complicated in this, like John Mahoney from Frasier, who Frasier's dad is most likely a homosexual. It's one of those, like, open secret things, but he himself never talked about it, literally ever. None of his co-stars have ever talked about it. It's just one of those open secret things. And so when it comes time to me doing, like, Pride roundups, I want to include John Mahoney because I adore him, but I will not because it's like he didn't claim it and we don't know for certain. Like, it's and, and that's, like, just for me posting on Twitter. I do that much fact checking for that bullshit.
Well, I mean, this is why, this is what's so sad is, like, I don't want to be dramatic, but, like, truly, like, part of that list, that his history is now a little lost.
Yep.
Like,
yeah.
Like, I mean, that is queer history lost. And yep. without, this is why we talk about being loud. Obviously, no matter what marginalized group you come from, you need to be loud. Obviously, an incredibly important theme right now.
Mm-hmm.
But this is why silence is death.
Yeah.
Now he's not a part of the pantheon of queerness, which is excellence, and we deserve to have him in it. But now we can't do anything about it.
It's so frustrating. And so that is why, like, I put all this effort into, like, writing piddly little articles on the internet, and she is writing for the NYU.
I know.
And she can't just, like, directly ask, are you guys gay? Are you okay with coming out? Because also, it's not her job to, like, take that story in her hands and run with it.
Right.
I don't know.
It's,
I mean,
stupid.
In some cases, if Jerry was a comedian who made his bank making homophobic jokes, then yes, I do think it would be her job to out him as a hypocrite, a dangerous hypocrite. But he isn't. He's very innocuous. He's a seemingly a delightful character. I'm getting off my track.
I know, but that's why I do wish the episode ended a little bit more heavily on it doesn't matter.
Yes.
Like, it doesn't matter what people think about us. You know what I mean? It does still hinge on my sexuality is integral to my identity. And you knowing I'm not gay is integral to my sense of self. And
yes.
Honestly, my self-respect.
Yes, you must know, otherwise what freak am I? Like, that's the so, like, they immediately start having gay panic when they clue into, like, oh my god, you're from the diner. Oh no, this is not, they say not that there's anything wrong with that the first time. And then as soon as they might be swaying her, Kramer busts in and is like, hey guys, I thought we were gonna go take a steam. Hilarious.
Yes. Hilarious. And there was more to that scene. I couldn't help but notice that there's sort of like a swipe edit where you can, I think the scene kept going.
Oh, maybe.
I bet there was one or two little extra jokes where Kramer, there was definitely an extra joke
yeah,
where Kramer,
like,
did something weird in the steam room. You
yeah,
know what I'm saying?
Definitely.
And he was like, what? He needed a hand.
I mean, that's essentially what we get at the end.
Yeah.
The next scene we get is Elaine, we're cutting to a little bit later in Jerry's apartment. Elaine's wearing her huge parka. They're talking about, like, you know, Jerry's blaming her for this whole thing. When Kramer comes in the apartment during this scene, he nearly just completely knocks Elaine over. Like, he enters so forcefully carrying Jerry's present, and he just, like, almost obliterates her. And I found that
really funny.
Yeah,
it is madness, but delightful.
Kramer got Jerry that two-way phone, and that's a
problem. That's a problem. I already got him that amazing gift.
Elaine has to peace out and go find something else. The reporter calls on the two-way phone. And then I love this. Like, she calls and then George calls. He puts her on hold. And then he tells George, he's like, yeah, she's not going to play up that angle. You know, we fooled her. He says it sarcastically. Then he goes back to her line. She's not there. And George is like, wait, I heard you. And there's this panic of, like, no, the two-way phones, you can hear both lines. And I was like, this is the panic we are all feeling right now when we forget to mute our mics on Zoom.
Right. No, oh my god. You forget that turning off the video is not turning off the audio?
Yeah. Yeah. It is very, like, oh, that panic. And I really do. I think maybe the funniest moment of this episode is that the slow realization of Jerry and George on the phone realizing that she heard that. Because they, like, call Kramer to test, and they're like, this phone's a piece of junk, goodbye. I really like
that gave me I Love Lucy vibes.
Yes.
In the best way. And mm-hmm. and that's when Jerry is truly not, you know, he's doing a lovely, I mean, it's a trademark of the series, but when he's just doesn't talk like a human anymore.
People's personal sexual preferences are nobody's business but their own.
it's like a caw. I love it.
He gets it to the bird territory. And then the next scene is Elaine is going over the journals to try and tell them, like, no, it was a joke. I was, you know, doing blah, blah, blah. But then she won't take off her coat for the journalist and she freaks out.
Right.
And I like when Jerry is chastising her over this at the diner and they try to get her to take off her coat, the vitriol anger on Julia Louis-Dreyfus's face, and she's like, leave my coat alone, is great. And honestly, I mean, there's kind of a, you know, parallel to be made of, like, everyone's trying to control Elaine's body.
Is that too much?
That's interesting.
Is that too much? But I mean, like, she's like, I am a woman wearing a big coat. All of society keeps telling me to take off my coat. And yeah. I'm like, I fucking want my coat on. Leave me alone. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, that is diving too deep, but I love but I love diving too deep.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, I mean, because this isn't when she was pregnant, which if it was when she was pregnant, it would be genius.
Oh, wow. You know, yeah, I mean? If she was wearing the coat to hide up her pregnancy, and that was like, oh, man, the layers that we could get into. Oh, jeez.
Right.
So then they're giving Jerry his birthday gifts, and he gets – so this is where – so he gets a Broadway musical tickets from George, and then Elaine gives him a Bette Midler CD that's in one of those huge old cardboard – CD cases, yes, that you would only get like a Sam Goody or like a mall, like at the mall was where you would get those.
Yes.
Like, God, what was up with those huge cardboard cases for those tiny CDs?
Like reminds me of a Sega CD, like mm-hmm. what you would get like a Sega CD game in. And you'd be like, whoa. Like I almost loved getting a big box because it made me think, I mean, that's what it is. When it looks better on a shelf.
Oh, yeah. And it's also like, this is a substantial gift. It's a bigger right. box.
But, exactly.
But then there's this gay worry that Jerry has about getting a Bette Midler CD and a ticket to Guys and Dolls, that he's worried that getting gay things makes him gay, which is a very real thing with gay people that are coming out. Like,
yeah,
there's the knee-jerk reaction of like, hey, I didn't watch Drag Race for a very long time because I was like, that's too gay. I'm not one of
really?
Those gays. Internalized homophobia, like, et cetera, et cetera.
Internalized homophobia.
Yeah. And it's that worry of, like, well, I can't like things that are coded as gay because then people will know that I'm gay, even mm-hmm. though I am gay and it shouldn't matter. It's a lot of stuff. Jerry doesn't have to deal with that because he is straight.
Well, that's where the episode, tiny tweaks could have made it less problematic. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
it wins the day, surely, but mm-hmm. like, just like if he, in fact, you could almost argue it would have been funnier if he was like, I'm going to the play. You know what I mean? Just yeah. to like prove that he doesn't care about who he is. And then he sees the journalist there
oh, yeah.
at the play. That could have been an opportunity to have both.
The modern update of this is when they find is not that there's anything wrong with that. It's also performative allyship. It's like, not that
right.
there's anything wrong with it. And I'm also going to go to the play and listen to my Bette Midler CD because homosexual and straight people, like, you know, what you like does not determine your sexuality. Like, he could have
heightened. I'm going to buy more Barbara CDs.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That would have been funny.
I'm donating to Gay Men's Health Crisis. Like,
yeah.
If they would have actually. So,
yeah, I mean, it would have been awesome to see him at a pleasure chest or something.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm going to perform at a gay bar. He's going to get in drag.
I'm going to get this man to fucking drench my face with his baby.
Yes.
That's
the real stinger.
For that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So then at the diner, the gays have spotted him. There's a couple of gays at the bar and they see him and they're like looking, and then they like walk over and he's like, wait, what is this? And then he noticed New York Post has picked it up. And he reads from the article from the NYUS. Now in the New York Post, the comedian and his longtime companion seemed to be inseparable. Dun, dun, dun. I was outed and I wasn't even in.
Ugh, fuck.
Which is
and
great.
And both of their parents are dead.
Oh my God. And it's at this point in my notes that I wrote, like, come on, this reporter is a fiend.
I know.
God.
And it bothered me when Kramer, like, literally, like, falls through the refrigerator, like the fridge, when they're
yeah.
like, that's what you are. And he's like, blah.
I did really like when he busts in and he says, I thought we were friends. Like, the delivery of that was really funny. But then as soon as Kramer's like, well, obviously you're thin and neat. And then
yeah.
Kramer, Jerry's like, so are you. Although Kramer isn't really neat, but he is thin and single. And he
sure.
just, he falls through the fridge. Like Michael Richards just full, like he's been zapped with a taser or something.
Yeah,
like it's just
that like was that's what people think is funny. You
yeah.
know what I mean? that's what people think is funny. But it bristled me of like, God damn it! Like,
yeah.
the world has agreed that it is hilarious to be potentially convicted of such a crime.
Yeah.
Damn it!
And then they get a phone call, and because Jerry's mom is called, George answers, and that is when George freaks out because he realizes his mother has probably read this. He screams, mm-hmm. my mother, and he runs. Then we get the little conversation with Jerry's parents, and his dad is in the background screaming like, it's those damn culottes you bought him.
Yes.
This is how I learned what culottes were all those years ago.
Oh, I knew about culottes, honey.
Have you gotten, gotten into the culottes?
My mom was a real queen. My mom taught me what an empire-waisted dress was when I was like six.
Oh, wow. I like that.
Yeah, she's a queen. But yeah, like classic tropes. And then the other mom is in the hospital.
She's falling off the toilet. So like, this is a callback to the, I think it's the season 3 episode, The Contest, where they all agree to not, because George's mom comes home and finds him in the bathroom masturbating to a copy of, I think, like Red Book or something. And then she like slips and falls and like she's in the hospital. And then George is tempted in that episode by two women behind the curtain giving a sponge bath. And they did that. And they did that to Mirror in this one because he's in there and Scott comes in to give a sponge bath to the man next door.
I see. Yeah. I didn't recall that episode, and I was like, huh, this seems a little strange.
Yeah, that's extreme. She's fully in the hospital now. But, so, like, there was another episode, I think, earlier in the run called, I think, The Masseuse, where George goes, and he thinks he's going to get a massage from a woman, and it's a man.
I remember this.
And then he freaks out. He comes back, and he's like, it moved. And they were like, what? He's like,
I remember
my
this.
Penis. Like, he didn't say my penis because he couldn't on TV. But,
right. And it moved.
But it moved. And this is where I started going on this fantasy of like, what if this was George's coming out episode? Like, we've already had the one episode. Now they have two. And he doesn't look not turned on by the two men getting sponge back.
No, he's not. He's certainly not turned on.
Yeah, he's looking. And I was just like, I would have liked to, like how, I mean, spoiler alert for It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, how they actually made Matt, they actually had Matt come out, and now he is gay on the show for like two seasons now,
right,
and is going through like gay storylines and is doing all that. Like, I would have been like, man, it would have been cool. I would have liked to have had George Costanza on my side, as trash king of gays.
No matter what, that would have been amazing. It would have been impossible to do.
100%. Never would have happened.
Impossible. It never would have happened. Never, never, never. Because it reminds me of when on Queer as Folk, when I don't remember the characters' names, but they basically, for lack of a better, for an accurate name, the Shoshana of Queer as Folk. Mm-hmm. I guess I'll say the Charlotte. The Charlotte of Queer as Folk like joins a cult. And like a major, that was a real jump the shark moment. He like stays in the cult and becomes a major like season arc. And it's just like, guys, literally, it would have been better if the character literally said, I'm going to leave the show now. They don't have any more stories for me.
not the cult. They drew it out of a fishbowl. You're in a cult. Sure.
Truly.
This is the point where back at the diner, a military man comes up to Jerry and he says, like, thank you so much for your inspiration. I came out and was discharged because of you, but it was worth it. Like, such an inspiration.
Yeah.
I'm just like, it's kind of the same thing about the beginning of like when with the George thing of like, really, this guy? You came out? Yeah, discharged because of Jerry Seinfeld? Okay.
Yeah,
he's not
yeah.
that big of a stand-up. I don't know.
That was very funny. Also, once again, that guy read that article, and that was the breaking point. It wasn't like George Michael's story.
No.
It wasn't Rock Hudson's battle with AIDS. It was this article about this guy who's writing an NBC pilot. Which I still hate when they talk about writing an NBC pilot. I hate it. It freaks me out.
That is the most meta thing the show ever did, actually, because it's a whole season long arc where they are making this show within a show. It's truly wild. There's this moment. So like Jerry then says he's not going to go to the Broadway because of the gays. He doesn't want to be seen that way. George starts freaking out because he's like, what the hell? Like, this is bullshit.
Like, I'm going to be loud.
Yeah. And then the diner, the cook comes over and tells the boys to like, hey, can you boys calm down? And then the camera, does it kind of zoom in on his earring?
Yeah, I was completely confused about this.
It was
like, Yeah.
It was his, and I was like, oh, is it his right ear? Because right ear is coded as gay, like it's like a gay signal, but it was his left ear.
I couldn't tell if they were telling us, look, he's telling them as one of them to not make a scene as a queer person.
Yeah, and but it's just like, it was very confusing.
It was confusing, and you could tell there was a more concrete version that they decided to water down. Yeah. Because
who knows what the I don't know, this might be edited for syndication version. Maybe there's a longer scene somewhere. So then possibly. This is where George realizes, oh wait a second, everyone's reading this article. That means this girl that I've been trying to dump needs to read this article. I love. Yes. She's like, oh, he goes, and it the smash cut to her reading it and then just looking at him going, yeah, so
what is wrong with her?
She doesn't get it. She's like, oh no, it's nice they mentioned you.
She's insane. I love that. I love that. Scream, I'm gay, and she's like, you are.
I loved him saying, I'm steeped in gayness. Which really makes me wish that George Costanza actually was steeped in gayness, because a gay lead of a sitcom that says things like "I'm steeped in gayness"
would be a real joy, and it would be a joy to have a gay icon like George, who's just not the typical '90s man. Because as we saw from the gay walk-on in this episode, that's what we think of. We think of a visually stunning billboard man.
Yeah, like
as gay.
Marlboro disco cowboy, basically. This is where the straights are totally wild, because the next scene is back up at the apartment and Jerry is hooking up with the college student. He is hooking up with the NYU journalist, because and she's like, oh, I'm so glad, you know, I did find you attractive. And I was just like, I forgot this part of the episode. And I was just like,
it's kooky.
He's a solid, at most, at least like 16 years older than her, 17 years older than her.
Yeah.
And then also just like power. Like, it's a rough. It's rough. Weird.
It's weird. But it is. It's like, and it's also just so funny. That's like, wow, that kiss proved it. You cannot be gay, because it is not a spectrum of complicated expression.
Yep, and also bisexuality, definitely not a thing.
I mean, just ask Sex in the City. No one believed in bisexuality at this time.
So that is when, like, George brings his girlfriend, his sweet, dim girlfriend, over to prove it. Like, Jerry's going to tell you. He's going to set the record straight. And they bust in. And then George has to feign offense and shock of, like, Jerry, you're cheating on me. and then it becomes this, like, connection of Three's Company. Like,
this scene is great. Scene is great. Yeah. Keep it. Like, all the microaggressions of homophobia are worth it to get this scene, because it is, like I said, it's I Love Lucy. It's camp. It's very camp.
Because George keeps trying to touch Jerry and, like, hold his hands and stuff. And Jerry's like, what are you doing? I'm trying to hook up with this child. And she's an adult. She's a woman.
Thankfully, casting age is ridiculously high.
Also, she looks like she's 30. I did not really buy her as a, 18 to 21 year old. So I don't know.
Totally.
And then I do like that George is like, well, you know what? My secret's actually is that my name is Buck Naked. I'm a porno actor. And then she's like, ooh, she's totally into it.
She's totally into it.
She is great.
She's perfect.
Where is our show? And this is also the moment where we get Kramer then, while this insanity is going on, Kramer then comes in with a man. Pokes his head in. Mm-hmm. The man is there, and he looks.
Ooh.
Yeah, he just looks like a gay 1970s disco stereotype in like 90s clothes.
Right.
Like, he's just like thin, muscular, dark hair.
Like if Gaston discovered what's that thing where you have to wait 12 hours to eat?
Oh,
you can only eat like for 4 hours a day.
Oh, is that a do it?
It's one of them.
I was thinking
anyway,
it was like one of those like cleanse diets or whatever, and he's just like shitting all the time.
Yeah, it's press juicery Gaston.
And then like they go into his apartment, and the Kramer has to pop back in and be like, he's the phone man.
Uh-huh.
And it's like the phone man makes house calls at night. It would have been if you're going to make any cast member sexually adventurous and bisexual, it would be Kramer. Kramer should be like, yeah, obviously, yeah. I'm experimenting. But again, it's 1993. Can't do it.
If Kramer was Pan, that would be so cool.
Would make so much sense. Ugh.
It would be so cool. Yeah. It would be so cool if he was like patient zero for like super crabs.
Yeah.
It would be a great story arc for him.
Oh, boy. So then the end of it is Jerry doing stand up of like the stereotype of gay men being thin and clean and neat and all that. And he's like, there must be fat, sloppy, married gays that are discriminated in the community. And it's like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
cool, yeah. Man. This is accurate.
This is accurate.
27 years ago, and it is speaking the truth.
We all hate our bodies, even though they're perfectly functional, just things.
Yeah.
It's a real problem of privilege, but I can't shake it, Brad. I'm telling you, I all the time go back and forth between I love my body and like a wind rolls through and I'm like, you're fucking trash unless you're an Aussie bum model.
Yeah. Oh God. Well, as a purveyor and connoisseur of Speedos, I do see way too many of those. I want more body diversity in those advertisements.
I do.
Damn
too.
It. Hire me as
and
a model.
Give
me gigs. Give me gigs.
You look great. You really look great in a Speedo. And I want to say I admire you for just being like not being afraid to share it. Because every time I see you in one, I'm like, yes, he looks awesome in that. Why would I judge myself so harshly? Like, it's not fair. It's not nice to me.
Well, you get to experience the art and joy of drag, which is another relationship with a body that like you get to perform and like put on an armor in a way. It's such a cool art form and like type of expression and way to like work through shit and also like help others work through shit, which is why drag is important. Damn it.
It is important. And I'm as much as we're inundated, I'm excited for the drag train of summer to continue keeping on.
What else do I have to do? I need All Stars 5. I need Drag Race Canada. I need give me Dragnificent Season 2. Give me give me more We're Here. Give me literally all of it.
All of it. Oh, Legendary. Legendary's on
Legendary,
HBO Max,
HBO
honey.
Max. Very good. Very killer.
So
I was invited to cover it, to do a set visit, and it didn't pan out. And then I watched a show, and I was just like, I don't think I could have handled this set visit. This is very intense. This is like all these people, like they are like, they're on another level.
It's amazing.
I was like, it'd be like Dobie Gillis goes to the ball. Like, it's just like, I am like the Beef goes to a nightclub. Like,
like Reba McEntire goes to the Eyes Wide Shut party.
Yeah. That is they would be like, you're going to stand at the very back. No one is, you're not going to be caught on camera. You are.
I love it. They need you. They need you. It was amazing. I'm excited to see more.
I'm into it. Are you ready for some must-have facts about this episode of Seinfeldia?
You know it.
Hey-o.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Oh, so 28 million people watched this episode of television. Not that there's anything wrong with that. 28 million people.
When it aired?
Yeah.
Holy fucking shit.
Yeah.
Holy fucking shit.
It was the number 8 most watched show of the week. Number 8.
Holy fucking... The numbers are just a different world than what they are right now.
The top 5 shows, and there's some gags and goops in this one. Number 5 is Roseanne. Number 4 is 60 Minutes. Number 3 is part 1 of a 2-part miniseries called Queen, which starred Halle Berry as... It was set in, like, plantation times, and she was the mixed-race daughter of a slave and a plantation owner, and it was, like, this character's life story. And Halle Berry played it. Number 3 most watched show that week. Number 2, Home Improvement.
Yep.
And
okay.
Number 1 was...
Oh, can I guess? Is it Family Matters?
No.
Okay.
Number 1 is the Oprah Winfrey special where she interviewed Michael Jackson.
Wow.
At Neverland Ranch to address the child molestation allegations.
Holy
shit. I remember that in vivid detail when that happened.
I kind of remember it. I just remember, I mean, my family at the time was so pro MJ that they were like, these are lies.
Yeah. I remember that my mom, I wanted to watch it. And my mom, I feel like she videotaped it because I love Michael Jackson so much. And I was like, here's an interview with Michael Jackson. And then I watched it. And then I remember I think I blacked out after that. Like, I don't know what I watched. That's a fucked up episode of television to watch when you are, 9 years old, I think I was, 8 or 9. So
it's wild.
The NBC Thursday night lineup at this time, which is truly a testament to how dire things were before, like, the Friends, Frasier, Will and Grace, like, renaissance that is right around the corner. Like, right around the corner. The night started off with a rerun of Cheers. That's how they started their Thursday night lineup all season long, was rerun of Cheers, followed by Wings. Wings, then new episode of Cheers, then Seinfeld, and then L.A. Law.
Holy shit.
Just like
that's L.A. Law. I remember that being pop, but I don't know what the fuck that is now. Yeah, but I remember that being very, like, popular.
Lawyers, probably lawyers fucking, like, lawyers and, you know, having sex and drama. A truly wild fact is the night that they shot this episode, Estelle Harris, who plays George Costanza's mother, was not available for the shoot that night. So in order to get the laughs they needed to, like, record and then add into editing, they brought in Fran Drescher to stand in as George's mom, and she played the scene. And that is available to watch on YouTube. You can find it.
Whoa, yeah. I want to see that.
And she just comes in, she does all the lines, and it's Fran Drescher. She's great. And then they then did pickups, like, a little bit later to get her in, to re-edit her in there.
Wow. Like, I want to see that. That's fucking crazy. And that also, I mean, that also makes me think, I wish there was a version of Seinfeld without the laugh tracks. That would be fun, wouldn't it? Why not?
Someone can edit that. Someone can edit that.
Yeah, I think that should come. Okay.
Leah Remini auditioned to play the journalist.
Oh, what a gem.
I would have been into that. I love those 90s sitcoms where Leah Remini pops up and you're like, no one knows how big of a deal you're going to be. You're going to take down Scientology.
She has an amazing story. Her audiobook about in her Scientology book is amazing. Have you heard the audiobook?
Oh, God, I got to get into that. I haven't read the book. I need to definitely get into the audiobook. Oh, I love a Scientology story.
Because you just get to hang out with Leah Remini for a couple hours, and everything she says is funny. She's perfect. I fucking love Leah Remini.
Is she the best Drag Race guest judge? Like, I don't understand why they don't have her on once a season. Like, she should be an episode every season.
She's iconic. When she like is like fighting with Michelle and they're like, why did you like this? And she's like, I actually didn't like this.
It's so good. And it's like, she's the only person that will just like go toe to toe with Michelle and then be like, I'm doing this for no reason. She's so
great. Yes. And that's, nothing is cooler than like calling yourself out on fighting a battle you don't believe in.
It's just like,
so
the
funny.
Jersey Titans just clashing.
She talks about auditioning for Friends, of course.
Oh, right.
And she talks about auditioning for the part of Monica, seeing Courtney Cox and knowing she was fucked. She was like, look at this fucking stunner. I'm fucked.
She gets a standout role in season one of Friends in the birth episode where she plays just like another, like a woman that's in a scene with Joey. One episode. It's like, she's great. You understand
why. Her.
Ugh. This episode won the 1994 GLAAD Award for Outstanding Comedy Episode.
Wow. Okay.
So, you know, yeah, hey.
You know,
bona fides.
Wow. I mean, you know, for the time it was, maybe they deserve points, and I still find myself laughing at it. And even at the homophobic parts are, like we said, pretty lighthearted and cute.
Yeah.
They're toxically masculine, but they're pretty cute.
Yeah. And we'll say, like, Jerry and George do come across as buffoons.
Yes.
Like they do heighten their, not that there's anything wrong with that, to such a point. Like, the last time George says it, his head is literally in his hands. Like, he's so tired and just
right.
Like, oh my God, it's pretty
right. It's pretty cute.
On IMDb, 3,215 users rated this episode a 9.4 out of 10. Would you go higher or lower? Or is 9. That accurate?
9.4 out of 10. I'd give it a 9, Diva. I think 9. I'd give it a 9.
Yeah, we can pump the brakes just a tad bit, but yeah, I think
just
9 is
a
good.
Little.
Yeah.
Just calm down.
I don't think it's one of my 10 best Seinfeld episodes, which is a list that I have made, but it is a good one.
Yeah.
Who has the must-see performance in this episode? Oh.
You know... You think it's the girl. You think it's the gay.
I was going to say Elaine, but no, I'm giving it to that Allison, that George's crazy girlfriend.
I'm torn because I think George is excellent in it. And I even laughed at his toxically masculine and somewhat creepy moment. Like, even the moment where he's creepy and he's like, I will have sex with you.
Yes. Right now. Let's go.
Yeah, I laughed at that.
Yeah, he's great.
Because, like you said, the joke is on him being a doink.
Yeah.
I'll give it to George.
Cool. So, yeah. And I'm definitely giving it to that kooky weirdo. I love me a good... one episode weirdo. And lastly, must other people see this episode of television? Would this be a good first episode of Seinfeld?
I think it's a great episode. I don't know if I would say first, but I would put it in, and there's so many good episodes, but I'd put it in the top 25.
Yeah, it's like the Alyssa Edwards of Seinfeld episode.
Pop the brakes.
Sorry.
I don't get cute. I get drop dead gorgeous.
She is great.
I just want you to know you're crazy.
I'll rethink. I do. I love her. I don't own any Alyssa merchandise.
I want you to revisit your placement of where she is because she is everything.
I live. Honestly, maybe I should. I forgot to include her work in Secret Celebrity Drag Race, which was exemplary.
Excellent. And I love how she showed up on the runway just to remind the judges who they didn't crown.
God, that is true. Because, like, her look, that I can't remember what it was, but I remember seeing it and just being like, my brain exploded.
It was this pink pleather mullet dress with, like, a giant ass bow.
Yeah, I do. God, I did love that. Okay.
Just think about it.
I'll revisit. And she can be a good 10.
Yeah, yeah.
I just have such an affinity for Trinity.
Yeah.
What the fuck? That should be her line.
Trinity's great. I'm not gonna deny it.
Awesome. So where can people find you on the internet if they want to talk about Seinfeld and also Drag Race?
Yeah. You know, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at MonoGapian. And you can listen to my Drag Race podcast, as you so kindly mentioned, Drag Her. You can listen to We Love Trash, which is a Patreon podcast with me and Betsy Sodaro.
Ooh, what's something y'all have eaten recently?
Ooh, let's see. We've been watching a lot of trash lately.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. I mean, like, we watched this movie called Ninja 3, The Domination, which is this, like, it's like from the 80s, The Canon. You know The Canon?
Oh, yeah. I love me some Canon.
Yeah, it's that film era, and it's incredibly special.
Ugh.
Make fun of all reality dating shows. I have a podcast.
Oh, I need to listen to Too Hot. You're Too Hot to Handle.
Yes. 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 Yeah. And join us. And best of all, I'm very happy to say we're donating every penny of our June patronage to 3 amazing charities, Black Lives Matter, the Black Voices Collective. And the bailout fund for Black mamas.
Yes, good. Awesome.
So, yeah, come blow off a little bit of steam and also do something to help us out of this unfortunate moment in history.
take a break, and then get back in the fight. That's what we're here for, the break part. We'll see you at the fight part. And that does it for this episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks to, again, to my guest Manu Agapi and for dropping by and talking about Seinfeld with me. Next time, I'll be discussing a gay episode of another sitcom for Pride Month that I haven't picked yet. And you'll just have to hang out here to find out what it is. Until then, I want to hear from all of you. Follow Must Have Seen TV on Twitter and Instagram. Let's talk about sitcoms and etc. And I will also be streaming classic black sitcoms on my Instagram. I did it with Family Matters and with links to charities and things that you can check out and donate to, etc. Because God damn it, Black Lives Matter and black people have been a part of sitcoms and have given us the best goddamn shows. Fresh Prince is fucking streaming on HBO Max. I am cursing a lot because it is absolute, everything is bullshit except for the art that people have given us. And I'm trying to help. I don't know. Please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brett White. Read the words that I write at decider.com. Thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to y'all for listening. And I will see you next time on Must Have Seen TV. Yes!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.